Hi, and welcome to Interviews with the Masters, brought to you by TheOutdoorInsiders.com, your number one spot for inside information and quality gear. Today we have with us on the phone Ross Moline from Matthews Dominant Bucks, Realtree's Whitetail Country. You've seen him on Whitetail Slam. He's an avid, to say the least, whitetail hunter, and has been in and out of the industry for a while here. Ross, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me, John.
Good, good. Guess you're gearing up, you know. Whitetail season's coming. In some states already started, but a lot of guys start right here the first week of October, and here we are in the middle of September.
Yeah, we're closing in. Usually I'd be hunting in Wisconsin by now, but actually didn't have anything that I wanted to go after, so I didn't even buy a tag this year. So
really?
Just waiting for Iowa to open up, and it's a pretty good horn year. I mean, we had really good, obviously a lot of moisture and a lot of pretty mild winter, so it's turned into a pretty good horn year. A lot of big bucks, guys everywhere have got big bucks, so should be pretty good.
Nice. So now, as an Iowa resident, obviously you don't have to draw, correct? But as a non-resident, you have to draw the tag?
Oh, yeah, something like that. I'm a resident, so you just get your tag and go hunting.
Nice.
Yep.
Awesome. You got any big hunts planned this year other than Iowa?
Oh, not really. Just kind of staying close to home. My wife and I just had our third child here a week ago, so this...
Oh, wow, congrats.
Hey, thank you. We had two girls, and now we finally got a boy. So our son was born here a week ago. So it's been busy in the last couple months, to say the least. So
that's just like me. I just had my third child, also had two girls first, and then had a boy about 5 months ago, almost 6 months ago now.
And, all right.
Yeah, feels good, huh?
Yeah. Congratulations, too.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, like we had just been talking, I live in northern Iowa. I actually have been working in the fitness and sports performance industry for the better part of almost 15 years now. And I have an office in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and then I have an office in Iowa where we live, too. And I kind of have customers in both states, being that Wisconsin and Iowa are kind of are pretty close in proximity. So I kind of run my fitness business in two states, and that's kind of what I do for my day-to-day, but I have my hands in a few other things as well.
Yeah, now you do, like, sports-specific training, right? You're a strength and conditioning coach?
I am a strength and conditioning coach, yes.
And you had a – did you play for an NFL for a short stint or something like that?
Oh no! I had a sniff with the New York Jets as a running back in 03. It was just out there in New York a little bit, mini camp and things like that, and never made a roster or anything. I played some arena football after that and kind of bounced around a little bit, and which was a great experience, but didn't make a career out of it or anything. I missed deer hunting too much, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's funny because I went to my first degree I got from Grand Canyon University was in exercise physiology. And
oh, wow.
I was a CSCS. I was a strength and conditioning coach, and I worked on the athletic training staff there. So I did. I actually worked with quite a few arena football guys. I did some stuff with the quarterback in front of the Bears and a couple of guys here in Arizona, the Rattlers, and I did quite a bit of that. Now I went back to school and I got my degree in rangeland management at the college from Colorado State, because I knew, right, like you, I had a passion for the outdoors. And so, it's funny because I'm not doing either one of them, really. I mean, I have a hunting related business, but I'm not doing anything with the, deer manager or and I'm not doing anything with my strength and conditioning. So I own a construction company and I have my hunting business, but,
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy just how life turns out. But anyway,
Yeah.
how'd you get started in hunting?
Well, just a typical kind of farm kid, just out exploring and that sort of thing when you're a kid. And then obviously in the part of the country I grew up in, deer hunting's huge. And
Right.
so every kid that's 10 years old can't wait, for the next year or so where you can actually go out there and hunt. And that was me. So just kind of got started early. We had a good amount of hunting in my family. So just typical kind of getting started, just living out in the country and chasing animals around, and kind of ballooned into bow hunting for deer pretty quick.
Nice. I've never hunted Iowa. I've been wanting to go. Actually, a buddy of mine just picked up some land there, and I put in for the draw this year. I didn't get drawn. Usually takes, he said, about 2 years. I was in out of state 2, 3 years in
Yeah.
the region that he's in, I guess. So hopefully I'll be able to make it out there soon. I've hunted all over the West, Midwest and stuff, but I just never made it to Iowa. And I've been hearing about Iowa Giants for years and years now, and need to get out there.
One thing I will tell you, John, is if you do get a tag and make it a priority to hunt, that season there. Some guys they draw a tag and they take their week vacation in November, and maybe they shoot something, maybe they don't. My advice is to just really stick it out. Try to get as much as you can out of it. So maybe you hunt some during the rut, maybe it doesn't happen. Don't be afraid to go back and keep hunting, because for instance the month of November is dynamite all the way through. It's almost constant rut. So it's kind of like Kansas with, where there's always going to be action. So some people come from
Got it.
states where they have such a small window, to get on one of those big deer. They think that's the same thing in Iowa. It's like, well, it's like, no, you should come and maybe try to hunt the early season or scout or, do things like that. And, just try to make the most out of it. I see guys that, kind of burn their tag because they come for a week and then poof, they're gone and they didn't get a deer. And, it's that kind of deal.
Right.
So. And a lot of times maybe they got other stuff scheduled, like, oh, I got to run to South Dakota, I got to do this. Well, it's like, well, don't do that the year that you are going to bow hunt in Iowa. Just make that your priority, and once you tag one, go elsewhere. But I've just seen that
Yeah.
happen too many times where guys just get, they get too much on their plate and they don't make the most out of it. It's kind of sad, so.
Yeah. It's tough with me with that stuff because I always have to live by the 5 or 7 day rule for me because I have to make X amount of TV shows a year.
Yeah.
And, in order to do that, I'm putting in for 30, 40 states a year to get tags. And
Yeah.
typically, to make 12 shows, it takes me about 14 hunts. So,
Okay.
it's always trying to stuff 10 gallons of shit in a 5 gallon hat, basically, for me.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
I always have to make the best of whatever time I have. Every once in a while, I'll get a situation if, like you said, a tag like this, it's not only good for just, a short season, like,
Yeah.
just a bow hunt or whatever. So you could come back and hunt in the rifle season or come back and hunt, a muzzle loader or something like that. Every once in a while I do that, instead of burning the tag,
Yeah.
come back and give it another go.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I can
so I don't know if
understand.
you've
I can.
listened to the podcast very much, but it's called Interviews with the Masters for a reason because I get questions thrown at me all the time about specific types of hunting for specific species, specific regions, and so on and so forth. So I look for those guys that I feel are best suited to answer these questions. So I
Okay.
got some questions for you I'm going to throw at you, and we'll go from
Awesome.
there.
Well, thanks for considering me, John. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right.
So when hunting a new area, what are some of the things that you do leading up to the hunt? Like, how do you scout? How do you formulate a plan when it's not a place that maybe per se that you can do a crap ton of hunting or scouting rather?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'd have to say is that I don't hunt a lot of new areas anymore. Before I got married, I've been married, 5, 6 years now. I used to travel quite a bit, and it was great exploring, and but I more or less came home with tag soup. If I had, all those tags back, I only filled a few of them. And so once I got married, I, focused more on, staying around home, and I started to get more involved with, cattle farming and stuff on our home farms there. So now I don't really hunt a lot of new spots, but how I could probably relate to this better is, new spots on the farm. So for instance, maybe there's, one half of the farm where you just don't really spend a lot of time, or maybe you get permission over on the neighbors or something, like that, and all of a sudden, the door kind of opens and you kind of have a new spot. It's not necessarily out of state for me or anything like that.
Gotcha.
But the way that I like to do it with a new spot is definitely get in there in the spring. I mean, that's your ticket. You got to visit stuff in the spring, and that's when you're going to kind of, put some boot leather on and, really get around there and explore and kind of see what happened, for instance, the year before or, just currently, and that's going to kind of tell you a lot. So, you're kind of behind the eight ball a little bit if you can't hunt or if you can't scout around during the spring. I really like that. That's, I make sure that I'm always on top of that. I set aside a bunch of time in March and April, and, get into some of those areas and really kind of pick stuff apart. And that's about the only time of year I kind of do that sort of thing. So the spring is definitely a big part of it.
What are some of the things that you're looking for in the spring?
Well, you're always looking for the best habitat available. That's kind of your, that's what's going to hold the deer. And I'm always asking myself, will a bill, will, would a big buck, live here? Would he travel here? Would he walk here? What's the reason that a big buck would be here? And if you have a spot that you can't answer that question, well, I'm not saying it's a bad spot. Maybe you just don't know enough about it, but that's something that I'm always thinking. Why would a big buck be here? And what's his purpose? Why is he using this? Because if they get to a certain age class, they're doing things for a purpose. They're not just living somewhere. They probably got the
Right.
most prime. They got the most prime habitat. They know how to move about the habitat and the land and such to keep safe. So that's when that's how you start to kind of narrow it down is you kind of find those prime habitats and that goes back to getting in there and looking around a little bit. So.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like let me say this to the listeners. You need to learn about the habits and behavior of deer. So what Ross is saying is you need to look for the best habitat. You need to look for, how they use the terrain and so on and so on. But if you don't know how deer do that, you're not going to be successful in your scouting. You're not going to understand what you're looking at. So I feel like if you don't spend as much time trying to learn deer, he's got experience because of years of being in the whitetail woods and watching them and so on and so forth. So if you don't have that knowledge, you need to work on that first. Otherwise, the rest is, it's like trying to build a house on sand. You
Yeah.
need to have that knowledge base because, he's saying look for good habitat. Well, if you don't know what good habitat is, then you don't know what you're looking at. So I
Yeah,
just
'cause
wanted to step in there and
if you can't hold a big buck, then what are you doing
yeah,
hunting there?
exactly. So, all right.
Yeah.
Well, my so this kind of ties into the first question. One of the things I get also, what are the key signs that say, hey, there's a big buck living here? I mean, what is stuff that you're looking for exactly specific and kind of maybe like give me like in order of importance. When you see this, you know for sure there's a big buck using this and so on and so forth.
Well, the obvious stuff is like big sign, but you kind of got to understand like herd dynamics. So if you're in a certain area that has 30 to 40 deer per square mile, and that's not going to change too much if you go 10 miles this way or 10 miles that way, you can kind of break it down to there's going to be, well, on this 200 acre property, there's probably going to be probably two mature bucks that use it, possibly living on it, you know.
Okay.
So once you start to narrow it down, it's just a numbers game. It's like, well, there's got to be one here, you know, and then he's got to be using this stuff because this part of the property, this habitat, you know, these land features, because this is what's going to keep him safe. So, you know, outside of targeting specific bucks, this is just more in a general sense. Targeting specific bucks is kind of a totally different animal in itself, and you can get intertwined in so many different things with it. I'm just kind of speaking in a general sense here. But if you go to an area and, you know, you got the good habitat and you got good sign, I like to use trail cameras, you know. I'm not going to shy away from that. Seems like any more guys, you know, are kind of a little bit angry that, you know, everything's about trail cameras and food plots. But I'm going to tell you something about me. I shot a Booner and a 160 with a bow before I even owned a trail camera or planned a food plot. So I had to learn hunting the ridges in the woods, you know, a lot of years of not seeing anything, making mistakes, tripping over my own feet before I actually got stuff killed. So, you know, all that stuff that I do now, is just kind of things that, you know, have advanced and I use and things like that. So I like cameras.
I agree.
For helping,
me
you know.
Too.
But another thing is, in the country that I live in, is it's big bluff country. So, and a lot of people aren't really familiar with that. This is along the Mississippi River. If you follow the Mississippi River south, you know, all down the river, there's just huge bluff outcroppings that are 500 foot high, and then it drops down into a valley, you know, and up and down the river the whole way. So, no matter where you are, there's, you know, some of these same land features that are going to hold these deer. And so, you know, I zone in on these certain land features, and it takes time to understand kind of how the deer use it. But if you're in an area that has these nice land features and you know there's a lot of good bucks in the area, just get out in the summer and look for them. July, end of July, early part of August, best time. All you got to do is, you know, tool around in the country in your area, get on your glass a little bit with your binos, and these deer are going to show themselves. Like, I call it summer dumb. So they get summer dumb right around last part of July. You drive by a bean field, you can see a few deer, you know, buzz around. Maybe you can watch the property from across the way, you know, a mile away or something like that. And you're going to be able to locate some mature bucks, all right? So, you know, that's how you kind of start to put the pieces of the puzzle together, is start to kind of find a few of these mature bucks. And, of course, they're going to be close to that good habitat that you already know of. And, you know, you start to kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So yeah. I think, again, going back to what I was saying earlier, I think there's a little bit of disconnect with guys, because they've heard 100 other people say it on TV, reading books, reading articles. It's kind of, of course, this is, you know, talk radio, so to speak. It's audio only. There's no video. We can't show you. But if you can understand what good habitat is, what terrain features are, if you know what, like, benches are, if me saying that to you, or, you know, intersecting ridge lines, or and stuff like that, if you start in those places, I guarantee if you go to an intersecting ridge line, it's where one ridge line ends into another, and sometimes creates a little saddle right there, you're going to find a deer trail, without a doubt. Or these creek bottoms. If you go and you find a creek that has, like, a big, you know, big S-curves in it, I guarantee you on the exiting S-curve, there's going to be a trail crossing, because that's where the water's going to be the most shallow. It's just learning how the deer use the area, and then being able,
absolutely,
like Ross said, put the pieces of the puzzle together. You start adding that up with some of your scouting and looking at through glass and stuff like that. You put all the information together, and that helps you formulate a place to put a stand or intercept them, not necessarily a stand. Speaking of stands, what do you look for in a tree, other than the obvious being straight, but to hang a tree stand? You know, describe to me a perfect scenario, like if you're walking through the woods and you say, "Oh, that's the tree right there," what is it that says that's the tree right there?
Well, you know, it's got to have accessibility. You know, that's the big thing. And, you know, as you get further along hunting these big old bucks, you know, you start to realize that, you know, getting in and out and your accessibility to the tree is just vital. So, you know, accessibility and being close to, you know, what that big buck or deer are gonna consider security, okay? Because I don't want to cross a lot of zones. I don't want to be, you know, putting these deer on tilt or, you know, maybe having this big buck, you know, smell me in an area that I shouldn't be in. I mean, those big deer will tolerate you as long as you don't get in their space, okay? You know, they're masters of survival, and if you think that they've never seen a human or, you know, things like that, that's baloney. These deer have adapted to be around, you know, people and farming and everything. So as long as you don't mess with their zone, you know, they'll probably stay in the area. So the tree has to be easily accessible and be close, but not too close to that zone. You know, and basically what I'm trying to do is just get within his realm or domain, because there's certain things that are going to make him walk, okay? And I want to be there for all of them. You know, some guys are so scared to hunt, and I don't know what to think about it, because it's like, do you ever really want to kill anything? You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, they find a reason not to go. It's like, well, right. There's going to be, you know, 4, 5, 6 times a year that they're going to give that buck a reason to be on his feet. I want to be in there every time. I don't want to be in there every day, but I want to hit all those times if I'm trying to kill that deer. I want to get in his domain. And if he figures me out before I kill him, well, he won. You know, that's the game, okay? But I'm not going to limit myself to one chance, you know, at this big buck. So I need to be able to get to that tree, and it's got to be close to the security of the deer. So, and it's hard not to overlap. You know, you're talking 50 yards here. You know, you can do it. You can go too far. So it's just one of those things where that tree's got to be in a good spot that I can get to it, and it's got to be a good spot for hunting.
Yeah. Well, let me back up here. You said buck has, you know, 6 times a year or 6 reasons or whatever to get up on his feet. Do me a favor, list what those are, so the listeners can, you know, can get an idea of what it is that you're talking about.
Well, you know, you're going to have, you know, during the first part of the season where they're really putting on the feed bag, you know, you're probably going to have a big front come through and he's going to get up early. You know, it depends on the personality of the deer, to be honest with you. And that's another thing I've really figured out. Deer absolutely have different personalities. And until you kind of understand that, you may or may not be limiting yourself. There's some deer that will not tolerate anything to do with humans. You put a trail camera up 100 yards away from it where they bed, they won't walk by that spot. They smell that camera. They don't want anything to do with it. Other deer don't seem to mind as much. And I don't know if it's their personality. I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe it's experience. But you can get away with more with some. Some like to roam. You know, I've had big bucks that cover 500, 600, 700 acres during the rut. And I've been able to kind of check or, you know, catch them on a couple different trail cameras, you know, moving around the outskirts of the farm and kind of see their pattern. Well, that'd be a roamer. Well, I've got other ones that stay in one little area and don't leave, and they're like a bully. You know, anything that comes in there, they're fighting and breeding, and that's their spot. You know, so every one of these big bucks is different, too. So there's never any, you know, specific thing, you know. It's always a different scenario on each of them. So you got during the early season, you know, you're going to have some fronts come through and probably get him on his feet for feeding purposes. You know, so you got a window there. So usually I'm hunting during the early season. If you got him pegged to where he's bedding, you know, you're probably going to be able to catch him during that late part of October, you know, maybe sneaking out from his bed early. Well, then, of course, you got the first few weeks of November where he's on his feet. You got a couple windows there where you might see him. And then towards the end of November, he's getting back into his little core area, maybe packing on the feed bag. So maybe you catch him out early one night, you know, trying to pack on the feed, you know, and then you got the late season. So right there, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, 6, 7 different times where that big buck has a good reason to be on his feet. And I want to be in that tree during all of them. I don't, you know, I'm not just going to say, hey, if I don't kill him November 1st, you know, I'm not, you know, that's it. I want to be on him. So that's my deal.
I'm with you. I mean, people ask me all the time what my what my number one, what I attribute my success to, or my number one tip or whatever. And I say, it's simply this: I put more time in the stand, more time behind the glass, more time than most people do. And that's why.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a lottery. You can't win if you don't play. So, you know?
Right. Or it's like, you know, the vestibule, I'm like, hey, I'm not any smarter than you. I just study more. So, same kind of
no,
thing.
No, I'm totally
know?
Smarter than they are. Are you kidding?
Well, you might be.
But.
Stuff.
I don't know. Do you hunt out of ground blinds at all?
Yeah, I've really actually gotten into that in the last like 5 years or so, and it's been a huge bonus. I mean, that the ground blind thing is just like a real pivotal strategy for me as of late. Between my wife and I, we've killed I think 4 or 5 mature bucks in the last 4 years or something out of blinds, which some guys are just kind of scoff at that to where they, you know, blind, you know, but
yeah.
in North Iowa where we live, it's your best option a lot of times, because sometimes you got, you know, kind of open areas, kind of, you know, roly-poly stuff where, you know,
mm-hmm.
you can't find a tree in a perfect spot. Well, you can put the blind wherever you want it. So it's been a big asset to us recently.
How do you I mean, I know what I do with a blind. I like to hear kind of what your setup is and how you like to handle it. And then I'll pipe in and give my 2 cents.
Well, I guess, during the early part of the year, I guess you start there. Basically, got the blind probably close to food, you know, trying to catch them coming in there or, you know, somewhere in between where they're bedding and food. You know, as I always have a blind set up for inclement weather. And the biggest thing that I've done with blinds, I think, is just being able to play the wind. So, you know, where I live, like I was talking about, is the bluff country. And most guys don't understand this, but the deer relate to the landscape because of the wind, okay? They
mm-hmm.
bed in certain areas because of the wind, and they use the wind, all right? So most guys hunt like what's called like an opposite wind, where they just, you know, the deer's over there, I want the wind blowing straight like this. Well, that might work.
Yeah.
You're going to see does and little animals, but if you want to see those big bucks, you're going to have to let them use the wind, okay? So to find a tree that's going to match up well with how that buck wants to move and put you in a spot to kill him is going to be pretty hard. But a blind, I can put a blind right in a certain spot where I know that buck's going to be coming, and he's going to think he has the wind, and then, bam, that blind's in the perfect spot. And I've done that to kill 3 of my last big bucks. I did that with the blind. Just put it in a good spot where I could use the wind, and
mm-hmm.
he could use the wind, and it actually got me a shot. So
yeah.
That's kind of my big thing with the blinds.
That's great information. Yeah, blinds kind of, and it doesn't 100% mask your scent, obviously, but you get away with you can control your scent a little bit better when you're in a blind. Obviously, because the wind's not passing through it, assuming you don't have all the windows open. But, you know, yeah,
right.
No, absolutely. I agree with you. One of the things that I caution about ground, not caution necessarily, but I like to tell people, if you're going to use a ground blind, is to get it up early.
Yes.
Get it so that the animals get used to it.
Yes.
Brush it in really good. Now, a lot of guys will hunt public land or land that, you know, the ground blind can get stolen.
Yeah.
One of the things I do is I actually build a brush blind. I build this big structure out of brush. And then when it comes time to hunt, I stick my blind in there, use that same brush that I build, you know, for the deer to get used to a structure being there, and use it to brush in my actual ground blind.
Wow, that's great.
You know, I've been doing that for years because I typically only hunt public land. Even when I'm hunting, you know, in the Midwest, just because I don't have the money, one, to hunt private. I don't have as many friends out in the Midwest as I do. When I go back east, I usually hunt private land because there's really not much public land.
Yeah.
But Yeah, so I mean that's one of the things I've been doing for years and years. I do it here in Arizona even. You know,
So John,
I the ground blinds I get stolen.
I know you like to hunt mule deer.
I do.
Have you shot some mule deer in the blind?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, I have. I have.
I actually have shot one mule deer buck. It was in northern Wyoming, and it's kind of the foothills of the Bighorns there. And so, it's not quite mountainous, but you got kind of those foothills. You got a lot of sage and prairies, and
That's where I
saddle
hunt.
oak and stuff like that. It was great. And what we found, I was out there for 3 years before I killed one, actually, is that you could have a blind set up in some of those spots where they move through. And it's almost like tree stand hunting, which is kind of it seems like an oxymoron if you go, if you're,
Right.
out in open country hunting mule deer and you're trying to set up a one spot for them to walk by. But that actually was a dynamite technique. And I wish I would have had a blind back then. I didn't bring any with me because this seemed like it would have been great. So
Yeah.
I was wondered about mule deer and ground blinds,
I have actually a good friend of mine who outfits out in Wyoming. His name is Bill DeShaw. I had him on a podcast many moons ago. And he operates almost exclusively out of ground blinds. I mean, he does a lot of over water holes and stuff, but he does set up, like on fence crossings, because, Wyoming's got a lot of private land, so the public land is always encased or landlocked, so to speak, in private land. So there's a lot of cattle ranching going on there, just ranching in general. So there's a lot of fences, and deer don't. I mean, they can jump over a fence easy, but they would rather walk 200 yards down the fence row to find an easier crossing, so they don't have to jump. That's just the way they are. People use ground blinds all the time out west, and especially on water, like I said, water holes, because water holes are water in the west is very it's like hunting on a food plot almost, in the Midwest, because it's not as readily abundant or readily available to the animals. But yeah, I've used them. One of my favorite setups that I and I killed one of my first good bucks here in Arizona was out of the ground blind. I actually took wire and made a cinch crossing for so that it was still plenty effective for cattle, didn't disrupt that, but it was just low enough that bucks would jump over and high enough that does and fawns can climb under. And I set that up on this really predominant trail, and sure enough, deer were coming past the blind, and I was able to score this decent 3x3 in velvet, like 12 years ago, 14 years ago, something like that now. But yeah, no, it's a great tool. You can get away with a lot more movement while, and move around a bit. When you're sitting up in a tree, you always have to like scan everything around you, look behind you, make sure, and then you go ahead and make whatever movement that you want to make, because you never know what's lurking behind you. Or so, but yeah.
One other thing with the blind in terms of filming hunts, for TV and such,
Oh
is
yeah.
it's almost a load off your back when you get to just climb into the blind and, sit down in a chair and start throwing tripods and, stuff together just to film the hunt. When you go, 10, 20 days straight, bow hunting deer out of a tree, and you got, two people and all the camera gear and set up and tear down and maybe hanging stands and blah blah blah. That's a lot on you mentally. So that's another thing about ground blinds is it kind of eases the pressure off you a little bit because you never know when you're going to mentally kind of slip up. Like it's like, oh, I know we should be in there in that tree, but I just don't want to do it. I don't want to walk all the way in there with all the gear, hang everything, blah blah. But when you got a blind, kind of like, well, a piece of cake, you get in there, get set up, and poof, you're ready. And it can be a big asset for film, and it can really keep you in the game. So
You take your tree arm down every time you guys go up, if you know you're going to be
most of the
hunting it?
time most of the time most of the time I mean, He usually, unless we're going right back or something, but between my wife and I, we only have a couple tree arms, and we're usually, going to be using them. So yeah, we have
Yeah.
to tear down every time.
Yeah, that's a pain in the ass to put those things up, especially the bigger ones that you gotta get them all leveled and everything else. That's a pain. Yeah,
Yeah,
I definitely I agree with you on that.
totally.
We never when I was when I have a when I have a cameraman, we never use a tree on. He likes to
Okay.
handhold it, and I don't blame him. It makes him more mobile, easier, less noise, less movement. But when I'm hunting by myself, obviously, yeah, I use a tree arm. And I use a really simple, small one. I change up cameras. I use my Canon G20, or excuse me, not the Canon GX-A20.
Okay.
And it's just easier. And
Yeah.
I don't have to mess around with it. But yeah, I've put up some of those bigger tree arms in the past, and I could see how you would want to go and shaking it off every time. That would be a pain in the ass for sure.
Yeah, it gets to
Well,
be a lot. But that's what it takes, I
man.
mean, you think guys think they get something, they can film something and it's, they did something and it's like, well, is it TV quality? Because,
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to go out there and, film something, that's great, that's what you were trying to do, but it's not the same if you're laying down broadcast quality
Yeah.
footage.
Yeah.
It's kind of a different deal. So I think people kind of have that
Absolutely.
misconception that you're just out there flashing cameras around or filming on your phone or something stupid like that. And it's like, no, you got to really have your setup dialed in and you're trying to do stuff at a professional level. You're not just, so anyhow.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, listen, if you ever want to come out here and hunt muleys, you gotta come in the rut. It's in January. Still
Awesome.
let me know. And if I ever draw a tag in Iowa, I'm gonna come break your chops.
All right,
And
John, come on.
you're gonna have to give me one of these big bluff deer.
All right. We got a few management scrubs you can probably handle, so.
Cool. All right, man. Well, thanks for coming on and taking the time to share some of your knowledge with us. And hope you have a good season.
You too,
And
John. Hey, man. Thanks a lot for having me. This was awesome, so I appreciate being on.
absolutely, man. Have a good one.